Before we begin, I just want to state for the record that some concern has been brought to my, at least my attention on our last meeting that we're not taking this thing so seriously. And I want to just emphasize and assure members here in the legislature, staff, press, and the public that we are dead serious about this. But there are times where legislators, we have talking about concepts, and some of the concepts are happens to be vital to us. We do need a certain amount of levity in order to break up the tension and come to a decision. And sometimes we do have that. Don't misconstrue that as being not being serious about the subject matter. We are dead serious about legislative reform, and I think, in my opinion, we've come a long ways in the last 4 weeks. We're under a real tight constraint, and we're going to do it, but we're human beings, and we do have to have some moments of levity to break up the tension. Any comments from the members here?
I heard a good question on the second motion.
Senator Rand?
Well, when you told me about this last week, Mr. Chairman, I was quite annoyed by people who were sitting out in, as observers, knowing or believing what they, instead of seeing what the work product was, to allow their opinions to become narrowed in the discussions, a free and open discussion. And I want to compliment both you and Senator Bates for allowing the scope of that you've allowed in order for us to get down to the real points and go ahead and address them in a conversational matter, because certainly they are serious points. And I think that we have gone a long ways in fleshing up the skeleton and at least getting identifying the points and coming up, and I think we're going to make our deadline. And if we are going to adhere to the more sanctified stricture of committee meetings, we'd still be down discussing some of the other first points, and you wouldn't have got any place at all. So I want to compliment you, and I'm sorry if it distressed any of the members of the observers, but I wish they would keep their opinions until they see the final work product, and then they could make the complaints after that.
Well, the other thing, Mr. Chairman, is we could have always done this behind a closed door someplace and brought out the finished product without having public discussion. And I think the fact that we are very open with this, and we none of us talk except we're in this meeting, is seeing the real work in action.
Senator Kelly?
Welcome.
I wasn't here.
You weren't here in the last meeting.
I probably would have been laughing.
Anyway, I just want to stress that we are very, very dead serious. We'll meet the deadlines, and the public is certainly going to have a shot at this bill, because at this these pieces of legislation, because they're going to have to go through the committee process anyway. So with that, let's continue with our discussions that we left off on last Friday. I believe we're on contracts 5A, I believe is the last point we were at, dealing with sole source loan.
I wonder, Mr. Chairman, probably this is out of order, but I noticed that there is a communication here from a concerned citizen that, citizen who's concerned wants to make a proposal here that might have a bearing on our initial precepts that we have already discussed, and I think that possibly to have her make that presentation might be the proper thing to do this time.
Mr. Ray, it's the intent of the chairpersons that, you know, anybody or everybody could testify. We'll just go ahead and allow for testimony right now, if that's okay.
Sure. Well, Mr. Chairman, this has a basic idea here, and it might have something to do with what we might have some pressure on what we originally do. At least we can look at it and discuss it and eliminate it.
Do you want the person to testify? Or?
Well, I think she's here. Why don't you ask her something?
Yeah.
You want to discuss it?
Connie, do you want to testify? Or? or just wanted to bring this out in writing?
I think I made other points on that paper, so it might be, you might like it better.
Okay.
If you already got all the points, we'll talk about it.
Well, why don't we have it testified, because the public out there doesn't know what's on that paper, either that way, we have to read the paper.
Well, the witness doesn't want to testify.
Well, I don't know, I've never testified, what does that involve, the reason being or what?
Well, yeah, basically, just, you know, highlight your points if you want, you don't have to. If you think this written memo is sufficient on your concerns, that's fine with the committee. Or you can step up there if you want. Decision's entirely up to you, Connie. For the record, just state your name.
Connie Halper, Sitter. Just keep this brief. My memo regarded the makeup of the committee, which I see as a crucial point, because I feel that the public has to have confidence in the committee, and so does the officials who are coming before it and having rulings made on their conflicts, or whether they did have a conflict or whether they will have a conflict if they do a certain thing. And the consensus last meeting seemed to be that the draft might have a committee made up of some legislators and two commissioners. However, I don't think the commissioners angle would be good, because they have to be confirmed by the legislature, present budgets, and several of them are presently also subject to conflict of interest problems right now, and including the governor and the attorney general, and they have no place really to go to get a credible ruling on whether or not they did have a conflict of interest. So that I thought possibly a good solution might be one conflict of interest board that could deal with everyone from the governor on down, but it would need to draw from a wide spectrum of viewpoints in order to have maximum credibility. And if someone came before the board and with a proposal of something they wanted to do, and the board said it was all right, and they went out and did it, they would have to have confidence that they wouldn't be prosecuted later or persecuted or something for doing this. And the only way that could people could have confidence in that would be to have a board that would really have credibility. And I was thinking of probably something along the line of a member from the Attorney General's office, a member from APOC, a couple legislators, a few members of the public, which I realize that presents problems also, because I don't think they should be appointed by the governor or appointed by legislative leadership. And that's basically what my memo says. Thank you.
And this is in reference to, just for the record, this is reference to the makeup of the ethics committee that's being proposed in this legislation.
Yeah, well, I think I was thinking of a board instead of a committee. If it was legislative, of course, it would be a committee
I commend the lady, but you're doing is giving us more problems than we ordinarily have. How would you appoint it? Would you have these people elected to the Conflict of Interest Board, or you would have them appointed by the governor that's coming in? It would seem that you would have the same problems that you're talking about, only you'd have them on a larger group. Who would appoint the legislators? Who would appoint the public members? Who would do all this stuff, other than political people, the head of the administration or the head of the legislature?
Yeah, I know. I realize that, but that's the problem with the entire, it's the basic problem of the entire thing, is who's going to be making the decisions and how will they be chosen, and how could they be chosen by the governor, who might come before them, or the leadership of either house or...
So you're just really, what you're doing is just giving us a bigger problem, because you got more people to appoint.
Well, possibly, but if that problem could be worked out, then I think at least the board would be credible, which I don't think it will be otherwise. And if it's not credible, then I don't.
That could be one way of doing it.
The jury?
No, the jury selection.
But who's gonna put pro and con? When you have a jury system, you have pro and con. But who's gonna put the pro and con on in front of the ethics board?
I don't know. Just a concept.
If you're gonna get it simplified, if you really want to simplify it, and if you're gonna have all these problems with credibility, why don't you just let them allow for that and put the judiciary committees from both houses or the ethics committees from both houses, and you can appoint anybody you want. You have you have representation on both of the from both the majority and dissidents
okay.
In the Senate and then
right.
And in the House. Well, why? I mean, so that there wouldn't be anything secret to it. Certainly, the information would come out. I mean, if it's not said, I thought that by putting people from the administration on it, after the commissioner is confirmed, he's in there for 4 years, and usually the biggest enemy of, or not the biggest, but they're one of the top enemies of the legislature. They're not willing to give a bit to the legislature.
Yeah, but he still has his budgeting and stuff, and right now we've got the AG himself, the governor, the commissioner of natural resources, and we did have the commissioner of commerce questions. I mean, you know, they're subject to the problem.
Well, you see, there's a lot of people that don't believe that there is any conflict now with Governor Sheffield, and there's a lot of people don't believe that he did anything wrong. And then, of course, from the opposite of political persuasion, that should be they're going to keep feeding it, and the media hasn't got anything better to write about, so they're going to keep beating the drum. And I just don't see that how can you get away if somebody is going to be pointing a finger and saying, these people are doing a whitewash. Well, you have a very vocal minority that do that anyway, no matter if the good Lord himself was coming down on Easter Sunday, they'd say it was a political thing or some kind of religious deal. So I guess you just have to satisfy what you might call the majority of the people in the state, and if you can satisfy them or at least quell their fears, then you're better off.
Senator Fase.
Connie, the ombudsman is appointed by the legislature, and yet once he's appointed and approved, he's out there on his own. He's pseudo-independent out there. And the ombudsman, the former ombudsman especially, has blasted the legislature for doing a variety of things. The Legislative Budget and Audit Committee is an arm of the legislature, and they go out and do audits, and they are in no way, shape, or form kind to the administration when they do those audits. They're super snoopers, and they're out looking for whatever they can to find. And wouldn't you agree with that? So just because a committee is tied or has been appointed by, I mean, we elect the governor of this state, and we're assuming we're electing an honorable person who's trying to do a good job. And I think if we elect him thinking, oh, now we got to make sure, we got to check on him, we're suspicious of him, and his every action is under suspicion, then why did we elect him to begin with? So I think we elect someone, and then they have certain appointments to make, and I think those, in most cases, they agonize over those appointments. Sure, some of those appointments are political, but a lot of those appointments are agonized over. And I think the Ethics Commission or Board or whatever we have here, committee, would be one of those appointments that people would agonize over because they want it to be as ethical, as upstanding as possible. And we've put two commissioners on here, and I would just think that the Commissioner of Public Safety, for instance, the reason he's on here is because he's an expert in investigation. He's usually a law enforcement or former law enforcement officer who has the opportunity or has had in past the opportunity to do investigations and to look at possible law breaking or one way or the other. Then we put the Commissioner of Administration on here because of the contracting, because that particular commissioner looks at contracts all day and has a lot of input to state business and state contracting and the kinds of people that deal with the state. So I think we put two commissioners on here that are not normally commissioners that are in conflicts. You know, they're really commissioners out there doing their job and are not in the political arena. Commissioner of Public Safety is generally not a political kinds of person. It's the same with the commissioner of administration most times. These are not sealed in concrete, though. These people can change or they can be that designee. But I think the idea is to bring in some outsiders, make it credible so that it'll pass the legislature, too. If you know, the subject has been here for 4 years. It's never gotten out of committee. Because no committee could ever decide on a basic thing like the framework of a committee.
Yeah, I realize that's a real stumbling block, and as I said, I think it's the real crux of the question. I don't have anything against having a commissioner or two commissioners on it, but I think that if I had to come before a board or a committee and say, this is something that I want to do in my private half of my life, is that a conflict or not? And if they said it wasn't and I could go out and do it, I would feel a lot better if it wasn't just some legislators and a couple commissioners, but it had other, you know, you could satisfy a diverse, some diverse viewpoints. The board is going to need flexibility because a lot of these conflicts that we talked about are going to have to be determined on the basis of circumstances and merit, and you're not going to be able to nail everything down in writing.
Senator Ray, final.
I don't see the legislature setting up a board, an advisory board to legislators and public officials. An ethics board is something when there's a complaint brought that examines the complaint and does whatever is required. They don't advise the legislator you're doing right or you're doing wrong. About the extent of that would come if a legislator was charged with doing something and the charges were brought up, they'd either say yes or no. Yes, you are in violation, or no, you're not in violation. They wouldn't say you can do this forever and ever. No board or commission would do anything like that, I don't believe.
I don't see why they couldn't have like two functions, and one would be to decide was there a conflict of interest and when someone was charged with it, and the other, there needs to be some place where a legislator or a commissioner or whoever can go and say, these are the facts, these are the circumstances, would there be a conflict if I did this? Not either don't do it when it might be okay and lose business or whatever, or do it and hope you won't get in trouble for it. I mean, they have, you know, preventative medicine, call it. Not just whether you did something that you're going to get nailed for, but someone that can look at something and say, you know, you're asking before the question arises, can I do this, can I not do it?
We're going to have to get down to this list here. I mean, we've got a short time. Senator Faith?
Mr. Chairman, I think what Connie is trying to do is set up a legal entity there, a legal body with legal powers, subpoena powers and all that, and really a legal commission, right, that can make profound law almost a determination, and I don't think we're ready for that.
Well, I think judicial agency.
Yeah, and I think that's not what we're trying to do here. It's one step beyond what we're trying to do. We're trying to set up a simple framework to begin our ethics and conflict of interest boards in the legislature that we don't have anything now. And I think what we're trying to do is take that first step, and you're asking us for something more than I think we're ready to do right now.
Yes, I'm sorry I'm late, but are you thinking in terms of a commission?
Yes.
Okay. I think that we discussed this when we were
here. Yeah, I wasn't here at that time.
Right. And I would just like to say that I also favor that concept, but I realize that we're going to go for consensus here.
Okay, with that, I think we better get down to our agenda.
I'd like to make a statement. I am for the strictest, most complete board or commission to eliminate any conflicts of interest, to make sure the legislators do not steal and are honest with the public, although I understand that we aren't going to get that far.
Okay, I want to get down to the agenda here. Members of the committee, and I assume we have enough drafts of this from the AG's office, Attorney General's office, relating to conflict of interest legislation. And I just wanted to make that known here. So we'll just go down here on this list that we had on Friday. I think we got as far down as contracts with sole source loans.
See the governor's proposal, Mr. Chairman?
No, I haven't.
It's the governor's. That allows APON to make the determination.
And don't get divorced, because your wife will never be able to get a job in this state.
Okay.
Your ex-spouse, all right.
Okay, I think we had agreed on the sole source contracts that anything above $1,000 had to go through the competitive bid. And I believe Representative Miller had brought that up at that time. And was that the, I think that's where we had left off.
We decided on
$1,000 as anything over it has to go competitive bid. Representative Lockett.
I'm sorry, but while we were discussing that, we never did resolve the problem of whether or not legislators should get state bids, whether they're competitive or not. And I believe that they should not, and I think we were in the midst of discussing that.
Okay. Open the floor for discussion.
I made my statement. I believe that legislators should not be allowed to bid on state contracts while they're...
It's a motion, and after discussion, we can vote on a motion.
That's a reasonable position, but the problem is it gets a little more complex than that, because what if a legislator owns a stock in a company that's going after a state contract?
Then I would say that that legislator, at time of running for election or after winning it, placed that company in a posture where he would have no influence.
Senator
Fates? With a trust, if you will, of course.
The only problem with that, Representative Locker, is that we're so small. We have such a small population and such a small group of people to draw from to run. And I think you're going to make it even smaller, because so many of us have companies involved with something or another. I don't happen to have any state contracts and don't foresee any, but a lot of people, what if I owned a company out there? That's my livelihood. I mean, I don't think we can ask people to be citizen legislators, be part-timers, and pay them the salary that we're getting, which I used to think was adequate until I started getting it, and come down here, six, did I say that?
Yeah.
Oh, geez, I didn't mean strike.
I admire that.
And come down here for 5 months, or however long it is, have set up a separate household with separate dishes and separate pillows. I didn't realize any of this. And then travel back and forth and not be able to do some of these things that every other citizen of the state can do. So, having thought about this, I think that we can't restrict like that. I think all we can expect people to do is to disclose, to be above board, but we can't tie their livelihood, or we'll just get retired school teachers like me running for the legislature.
This might end that, Robert. If you'll just bear with me till for the next day or so, Legislative Affairs Agency is researching the constitutionality of it, and first glance, they thought that there was indeed a constitutional question that you're trying to make to the retired citizens.
Well, but the problem is we're not talking about just legislators, correct? We're talking about public officials. Mm-hmm. And that's every person that serves on a municipal board out there, any number of planning boards. We're probably talking about 10 or 15,000 people out there. And if you want to include the University of Alaska employees, and I think we should, and if you want to include state employees over a certain pay grade, and I think you should, then we're talking about essentially half the state. And so what you're doing is you're restricting all of these people from taking part in the economic program in Alaska.
Representative Lockett?
Yeah, I would just like to say that in response to Senator Fakes, that we are a very small state, which would mean that there are so few people to draw from. Add to that the fact that the state is the biggest business in town, and in many communities, the local governments are the only business in town, and so then you add to the weight of a public official being able to control what specs, if you will, go out in a bidding process, and in so doing, ensure that probably he will be the only one or his company that is able to fulfill those specs. I'm really concerned about that area, because of having been in municipal government, we've had to do this. And there is some flexibility in competitive bidding, and I think that we just need to ensure that that is always spotless, and to do so, you must keep municipal officials out of it.
We all agree with that, Barbara, but the problem is that you're going to stop people from entering government, period. If they can't have an economic life and provide for their family and be able to make enough money to send their kids to college, you know, then you're not going to have anybody entering government whatsoever. And I don't...
Senator Reed?
Yeah, well, we got a question here. If Tim and I, Tim is in private industry and I'm in the legislature, and we are, along with 10 other people, have a corporation, and we're going to build a building for the front office building. And you're going to have 50,000 square feet of that, and the state wants 10,000 square feet. Does that mean that because we own it and the other 40,000 are going to be put out to the private sector, that the state can't, under a competitive bid, can't rent the 10,000 square feet from me and him?
Representative,
and the other 10,
I would just have to say that if they are the principal stockholders of that corporation, that while they are legislators, they should put that stock in some sort of trust so that they would not be controlling it. And would
but
have no
blind
control.
Trust is so silly. That's a whitewash if there ever was one.
Well,
people have put it in a blind trust, but the majority of them, it's just a fake allude deal. When they get out, they reap the benefits, and that's it.
Senator, I think we ought to wait for the research, and I think we'd better, at that time, answer the constitutionality question.
Well, I have one more point. Representative Locker, if, let's say, somebody on the municipal level did make an RFP that was designed that only one person could go ahead and get that contract, I assure you the other people who didn't are going to call that to the attention of the Ethics Commission or the Ethics Committee or whatever we're going to do here. That's where the complaint is going to get heard. That's what will catch it.
Call for the questionnaire. You want to defer that?
Yeah, let's defer it until we get a research. Okay, under number six, and I think this is sort of a misrepresentation on the word appearances, I should say, representation. Is there any discussion on that category?
Is this speaking of attorneys or of people?
Right.
What are you reading from?
This workshop summary.
Okay.
Yeah, it's on the last page, and it's section number six. It's marked
appearances?
Appearances. Deals with representing constituents is recognized as valid legislative function. No separate compensation shall be resolved. We're talking mainly about attorneys or lawyers in their particular situation, as far as representing clients or constituents. Representative Locker? Miller?
Statement A?
Yeah.
No problem.
Okay, B?
Appearing as a principal, so what?
I think that's in the legal documents in corporations, you know, being the principal stockholder of a corporation. Let's say a law firm. The legislator is the managing partner of the law firm, and you can preserve that status quo in existing business interests, but you can't go out and promote new interests. I'm trying to think of an example off the top of my head, and it's not coming to me. For instance, you were elected, your law firm has got a case pending with the state, and you don't try to get more cases pending with the state.
I don't know what that means, but that's okay.
Get clarification on that before we have to.
Why don't we
yeah,
go on to the next one?
Yeah, we'll get clarification from staff on that. Okay, 6C, legislative lawyers. Problem? Mike?
Well, yeah, I've got a little problem, and I think you can't tell somebody who's a lawyer that they can't represent a client against the state. I mean, that's, first place, I don't see how that comes in conflict with his legislative duties. As a legislator, he has no possible way to influence a court trial up or down. And I don't think you can tell a lawyer that, because I'm just guessing, but I would assume that a very large proportion of the court vote in the state is probably, the state is on one side or another.
Let me just get a clarification, Mike. Are you speaking just strictly for court? Because this says quasi-judicial agency.
Well, I thought you were on C.
Yeah, we
are. I may represent clients in criminal and court and civil matters in courts.
Not before quasi-judicial.
But you say where state is not a party, and I think you got to strike that. It says where state is not a party, because there's going to be a tremendous number of times the state is a party. And why shouldn't a lawyer be able to represent a client against the state?
Well,
or defend his client against state action, because as a legislator, we don't have any authority over that courts. I mean, we don't even, and I don't think we should pass on the
chair would entertain a motion.
I hate to see the chairman of the Senate Resources Committee representing a client in court in the EPA under an agency representing Exxon or one of the oil companies against the state.
Well, I don't see the point. Whether he's the chairman of resources or judiciary, I don't know what influence his being resources chairman is going to have on the judge.
Oh, okay. Here it is on page 5 of this packet presented by NCSL. The last paragraph, it talks about appearances before state agencies. So while it's traditional legislative function to intercede with state bureaucracies on behalf of constituents, this must be distinguished from appearing as a principal or in a representative capacity, say before APA or Alaska Housing Finance. Or
I don't have any trouble with APA restricting from that, because that the legislator does have authority
over those people.
Right.
That's right.
But he has not the remotest authority, unless you wanted to include their salaries, and that's as a class, not as an individual. He has absolutely no authority over any judge. We don't even have confirmation authority, and shouldn't, probably for this very reason.
Well, I'm thinking about appearances. The chairman of judiciary, or the chairman of the resources committee, is appearing on behalf of Exxon suing the state. I'm talking about it. It probably wouldn't have anything out of line, but I'm talking about public appearances and make it would look fishy.
Yeah. Well, you use the Exxon as one example. That probably would never it probably would never be the case, because Exxon's got its own bank of lawyers and everything else. But if some business person is being sued by Department of Environmental Conservation because he doesn't have a well or does have a well or something like that, and he's in court over it, I don't know why a legislator who is also a lawyer couldn't appear and make his client's case before a court of law. I don't even see what the appearance of the conflict is, because we don't have anything to do with the courts.
Representative Lyon.
Having nothing to do with the courts is not the same as what we would have to do with the Department of Resources, who would be feeding the information to the attorney for the state. And if I were Exxon and I had a whole battery of attorneys, if I could get the committee chairman for resources, I certainly would in a case against the state. So I think that would be the first thing you'd do if you could possibly do it.
I think you're assuming the judges are influenced in ways that they're not influenced.
I'm not even considering influence of judges or even jury. I'm talking about influencing state agency and the attorney for the state.
Well, if you want to influence the attorney, you don't have to take him to court. If you as an oil company decide that you're going to buy a legislator, you can do that right now and hire him. I mean, there's nothing that there's no law against that. I mean, I'm sure the lawyers.
There's
got to
be a law
against
buying.
Representative Miller, would you like to place a motion for
that? Yeah, I thought I did.
You're cut off here.
Yeah, I move that we remove the language where state is not a party.
Okay, how would that read in full context?
Well, we just read without the parenthetical remark. Legislators may represent clients in criminal and civil matters in courts, but not before quasi-judicial agencies.
Can you move it?
Yeah, I move that.
Discussion?
I object to discussion.
Okay.
And I've already discussed mine.
So what you're saying, Mike, so I fully understand it, that if you happen to be a legislator and an attorney or a lawyer, that you can represent clients before court, but not necessarily the quasi-judicial agencies such as APA or any of those.
Yeah, because in those cases, as a legislator, you are dealing with those people. You're setting the rules and regulations and everything else by which they live, and you even have, under sunset review, you even have the power of life and death over.
Senator Ray, you object because of the appearances?
Yeah, I'm going to vote against it too.
Okay. Ready for a vote?
Sure.
See, it's just not. I'll let the model up that everybody assumes we make myself.
All those in favor of Representative Miller's motion, signify by raising the right hand. All those against? 3-3. Motion fails. Okay, let's go down to 6D. Legislators should be restricted from employment as lobbyists or representing clients before state agencies 1 year after leaving the legislature.
Move we strike D.
Discussion?
I concur.
I believe we should leave it in.
Senator Kelly?
Well, I hate to penalize people. You know, once you get out of the political process or public life, I hate to penalize them for not being able to make a living in the private sector, too. You know, sure, I'm sorry.
Senator
Page?
What I was concerned about was the person being able to make money on something that they did while they were in the legislature.
Well, that is lobbying.
But that's not lobbying, that's right. So as long as we cover that the person can't make money off something that's been done or they influenced while they were a legislator.
Well, I'm saying the person just can't work for a year after they get
legislated. Well, he's got such a magnificent salary. He gets from the legislature, he may be able to take 5 years of sabbatical.
What are the negatives for allowing somebody to work as a lobbyist?
Well, Senator Ray, you want to comment on that, or you just try to make an argument?
If you take a look at the legislators that have been in the legislature and have retired from the legislative scene who are now active lobbyists, they don't seem to be doing any better than anybody else does, and they don't seem to be getting all these things across. And it's one thing of being in the legislature and another thing being an ex-legislator as far as political clout. You know, you say, well, that's too bad you were a nice guy when I could get your vote, but you can't vote with me now, so forget it. So I don't see that there's any extra benefit about being an ex-legislator who's lobbying. In fact, I can see sometimes where it would be a deterrent to getting anything done.
Senator, could you make an argument that since this guy is the ex-legislator and he becomes a lobbyist, you know, just by knowing some of the legislators from the previous legislature, you think he has a more of an advantage over, say, somebody else who's just a regular lobbyist?
Well, are we going to try to regulate the advantage and the disadvantage? What's his name, Reggie Jackson? Is he a better ball player than I am? So he should be able to hit as many home runs, and I should get 10 times at bats to his one? Come on now, I'd be realistic.
Yes.
Well, to carry it a little bit further, what the good senator has said about regulating advantage or disadvantage, the intent here, I believe, is that a legislator should never have monetary advantage from having served in the legislature. And if, in fact, there is an advantage for him because he has, then it's something that should be denied.
Well,
so we need to decide, is there an advantage?
You're talking about a monetary advantage for being in the legislature, serving during the period for which elected, or for which he serves, not afterwards. I mean, I understand you.
The part that we want to avoid is somebody enacting a law and then they go to work for that agency they created or whatever, and that's covered already. We have that 1 year probation there. About this one. I don't see how being a lobbyist, how you would get financial gain, except the only gain you have is that you happen to know people. You know more people than the other new kid that comes on the block.
But a lot of people know you.
And you've got a lot of bad baggage that you might be carrying around, too.
Well, I guess in our face, I'm just assuming that if these got in here, they must have some reason behind them. So
not necessarily. These are just things that people talked about. I think I might have been responsible for this one, or part of it.
Well, let me give you an example. Not representing Locker, I was in the liquor business for a good many years. And I've been out of the liquor business for, 10 years, I suppose. I'm recognized as having a considerable background. I used to be on the ABC board while I was a legislator, or before I was a legislator. I understand the liquor laws. I recodified them myself. Now, are you going to deny the industry and the people of the state, the good-thinking people as well as the bad-thinking people? You're going to deny them the right to have as good information as could possibly be given as a source on liquor problems and on what the law says just because I was a legislator? I'm not planning to be a lobbyist, but I mean, where would be the benefit to anybody?
I have to follow along with Senator Bakes that I would be thinking in terms only of making this like this same legislator not being able to work for an agency where he had ruled on it, and that's already true. And the same thinking, I'm sure, went into this. I guess we could go case by case and find fault or find a reason for doing it, but that would be the only reason that I could think of for this passage being in there, is that you were trying to get it parallel.
Yeah, I think
parallel.
It's a red herring. I don't think it's being a lobbyist has as many negatives as positives. I really don't think this is a problem.
All those in favor of the motion, I think you better restate.
Delete D.
Signify by raising right hand. All those against? Okay, the motion passes.
What were you doing?
I voted for deletion. Number seven, malicious accusations. Many interviewers expressed concern that there were mere leveling of charges was tantamount to public conviction. Senator Pace, you want to comment on that?
No, you said it very well, that once they even just bring it, when the press gets a hold of a rumor, you're guilty almost of it. And I think that's a shame.
You're accused of being.
Yeah, I didn't finish the paragraph. Some desired a penalty, such as payment of costs for parties bringing charges found to be without merit. Representative
Lockhart. Yeah, I first of all need to ask a question through the chair of Senator Fink. Have we ensured that there would be complete secrecy, if you will, when the charge is leveled until such time as it's resolved by the committee?
That's what we agreed on. Right. Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, then second to that, that I have no problem with statement A, but it should, in order to protect the public, we would have to say, for parties bringing charges found to be without merit and having malicious intent. I think you need to add having malicious intent. Otherwise, you may have an innocent public person who really thought, I mean, I think when you labeled it malicious accusations, then that needs to be in the body of what would cause them to have to pay.
Representative Lockhart, the chair, that entertain a motion.
Okay, I so move, Representative Phillips, that after the period, after merit, that we put with malicious intent.
Representative Miller?
I would not want anybody to think it's going to mean a darn thing, because the Supreme Court has already ruled that in libel cases, for instance, that so-called public persons and legislators are public persons and people even in high
open season.
It's open season. The slander laws do not apply. The libel laws do not apply. And the same thought processes that strikes down our opportunity, if we wanted to prevail in those cases, would do the same thing here. So I don't think there's a chance in the world that
yeah, I would just like to state that the Matson Borough was involved in a libel case, and we had a couple cases that had recently been ruled on by the Supreme Court that you cannot do whatever it is you want to do with public officials anymore. There's some new rulings in the last year or so, and maybe they want to look into that to see if this is
okay. Do you want to withdraw your amendment, Representative Lockhart, and then maybe we can have staff check this out and make doubly sure before we make a policy decision?
I was just going to add one thing to that. The Supreme Court did leave a small window on the thing when they ruled on the libel cases, and they said if you prove malicious intent. However, malicious intent is just virtually impossible to prove. So all a person's got to do is say, hey, I'm just a citizen reporting what I thought was accurate information. Unless, it's really just virtually impossible to prove.
Senator Ray?
Well, let's take a prime example. Of course, the self-proclaimed dean of the general media that has a commentary program. The man is an individual, and just in case, not that he's ever done it, but I mean, we'll take him as a case in point because he has a commentary program. What if he would malign somebody? How would you prove malicious intent? And what you did, and you got a judgment against him, how would you collect? What would you collect?
Representative Lockhart.
I guess what I was trying to do, and I do think that what I was trying to do was make this statement, one that you'd have to prove malicious intent, and if that was in there,
then you would not be stopping innocent bystanders who really felt there was something the matter, but you might be stopping some people that would just love to throw rocks for the fun of it. If that happens all the time, if in fact you can get a state agency or a committee or something to look into something, just because you have made a claim, and it doesn't have to be backed up, you can sometimes cause a lot of harm to the person that you've made that accusation against. And it would discourage some people.
Let the board make the determination.
Better defend
yeah.
Let the board make the determination.
So we can leave this in here without
sure.
the amendment, because
sure.
I think it needs to be put in here to stop the cranks.
The board
but
will make the determination
right.
anyway.
Except, Madam Chairman, it says here, some desired a penalty. Such a payment of cost for parties bringing charges found to be without merit. I mean, if charges are found to be without merit, does not mean that there was not enough evidence available to lead someone to believe that a matter was unethical. And I think this is going to cause you a lot of pain with the public. The fact that they could be charged with cost of, I mean, it could be reworded so that the committee could make that decision.
Right. The intent is malicious or political,
okay.
just to throw rocks, just an assassination in the class and do nothing but hurt somebody. That's the intent of this. It needs to be reworded, fine, but let's not reword it in such a way that legally is worth nothing. That's my only point.
Is the committee in agreement with that point, or do you want to wait for staff to come up with kind of a...
Chairman, tell you, I'm not very crazy about the whole section. As I say, we can leave it in there for the time being.
Okay.
One way or another, I'll probably suggest we take it
okay.
out.
We still got plenty of time to change your mind or whatever. I think what we ought to do now is I would like to have Mr. Grinnelli, Dean Grinnelli, can they sit here? I can't see him behind the camera.
Oh, there you are.
Come up and sort of just give us a brief rundown on this proposed bill.
Okay, 1 o'clock. I don't have all my time to spend on this thing, madam. It's taken my lunch hour away.
Well, I was going to
mention your
position. Dean, if you can make this in 10 minutes, I'd appreciate it.
There was a malicious laugh came from the professor, and there was malicious intent was written all over us.
Okay, Dean, go ahead.
I've got a bill for the judiciary, so I'm going to have to leave at about 5.
Okay. Okay, Dean.
Okay, let me explain
for the record.
What we tried to do. For the record, my name is Dean Grinnelli, Assistant Attorney General of the Department of Law. As we told the committee, we would try to come up with a bill that would cover all public officials. There was a theory that what is conflict of interest for one public official is probably a conflict for any public official. The result of our efforts is reflected in this bill with the proposed draft that you have before you, which is about 12 pages long. The first part of it goes over a number of the specific prohibitions, specific conflicts of interest, or potential conflicts of interest, which I discussed the last time, which was on the first page of my three-page outline. And you can take a look at those provisions. That I think all of those categories that I listed are covered in one way or another. What we've also proposed at this time is that one agency be responsible for doing an investigation into and rendering at least an initial opinion or recommendation as to whether a conflict of interest exists, and then that agency would refer the matter back to. In the case of an executive branch official, back to the department which employs that official. In the case of a legislator, back to either the president of the Senate or the speaker of the House. In the case of a judicial officer, to the Judicial Qualifications Commission or the Supreme Court. That recommendation would then have to be acted upon by the body that is referred to. But the responsibility for doing an investigation, for coming up with an initial opinion as to whether the conflict exists, and to issue advisory opinions would be with a single body. And the thought was that it would provide for more uniformity in defining the conduct that does constitute a conflict of interest. I would hate to see, in having a variety of bodies rendering these kinds of decisions, I would hate to see that that the type of situation we're in now, where the whole question is really up in the air, that everyone's confused as to what constitutes a conflict of interest. I would hate to see that situation would continue with a bunch of potentially differing opinions from various organizations. And that is why we have proposed that a single organization, and what we proposed here is the APOC, would be the agency that would render advisory opinions and would do an investigation and issue an opinion and recommendation.
Dean, do you have a second choice?
Just something new. Just create something that's specifically for this purpose.
Okay.
We
don't have any support or very little support for APOC.
I understand that. But something that would be just created for a specific purpose. Now, a number of these provisions are very broadly worded, and I think what is intended is to get a number of these factual situations before this agency and let the agency determine whether there is any actual conflict, whether there's an appearance of a conflict. And for that reason, you will have cause to snicker over a number of these provisions, because they are very broad, just like the outline that I brought to you the last time was very broad and worded. But in any event, this is a fairly strict provisions, and it would force these agencies, the ethics agency, whatever agency would use this, to review an awful lot of conduct. And it would really, in effect, I think what would happen as a practical matter is that this agency would have to devise regulations which would make more specific a lot of the conduct that they run into. I'd hate to see that every public official who owns stock, for example, in a regulated industry, for example, the oil and gas industry, would have to apply to this agency for an opinion as to whether or not it constitutes a conflict, given their specific duties. So I think specific regulations, policies that cover a number of the more common examples of conflict interest would have to be promulgated, and then advisory opinions on anyway, this is what we propose. I think it has the one benefit is that it will provide uniformity of decision making. And if this committee decides not to go with that approach with one ethics agency, then I would at least hope that you would consider some of the provisions that we have set out in the first part of the bill as to the specific instances of conduct.
Well, Dean, we didn't expect this bill to be perfect. It's a start. I personally appreciate the Attorney General's office getting involved in this on such short notice. Actually, we notified your office about 3 weeks ago to come up with draft legislation. I think, Senator Fates, I think from this point on, I think the committee should go ahead and take a look at the draft. And I think we're going to be comparing other pieces of legislation, such as Representative Miller's Senator Fisher's introduced legislation as far as conflict and code of ethics. I think what we ought to do is have staff sort of line out what the Fisher bill and the Miller bill and this does, stack it up in comparison to some of the policy decisions we have made here. And I think probably mark up next time.
The only thing we're going to have trouble with here is we're going to hassle over who's going to do it.
Yeah, right. That's going to be the
thing. That's the rest primary of it policy is just fine. Yeah.
Got it.
That's
just
where
the beginning.
Our problem.
No, that's just the beginning of the problem, Mr. Chairman. One thing I like about the bill is that it just doesn't zero in on the poor little person known as the legislator. There are only 60 of us in the state out of 467,000 people, so there might be some other people out there with problems. So, we're not just zeroing in on legislators. You're talking about the executive branch, the judicial branch, and everything else. But let me explain to you one of the problems we're going to have in this bill. And that's when you get down to a definition of a public official. All right? Now, we're talking about anybody that's going to have any economic interest that might have anything to do with the state. Okay? Now, that could be as much as a home loan, a student loan, participation in a minority stockholder position, in any kind of a corporation or business in this state that does business with the state. And now the definition of those kinds of people that have to report or that are reportable to this commission means those persons set out in AS 39500 A1, which is the governor and the judicial branch, and any other employee of the executive, legislative, or judicial branches of the state of Alaska or a municipality of the state, in addition to their spouses or ex-spouses and parents, children, grandparents, grandchildren, aunts, uncles, and siblings, either of the whole or half-blood, adopted, or step. Now, we're talking about half the population of this state is going to be floating around filling out paperwork, and you've got to worry about your whole family, and your participation in public government might be in jeopardy because of some step-grandchild down there who's got a contract with the state. Now, is this absurd or a municipality?
For doing that, Senator?
There was a reason for that. But there is some method.
You missed three meetings last week.
Yeah.
You don't have to attend any meetings to look at that one and see if you've got a problem.
What is prohibited in, for example, in some provisions of Senator Fisher's bill is conduct by public officials and people in what's called a close economic association with a public official. And when you start talking about those kinds of concepts, people in close economic associations, you start talking about family members. And if you are going to prohibit people who are partners of a public official from engaging in certain conduct, you're going to have to start thinking about prohibiting family members of the public official from engaging in certain conduct. And as I said before, this is very broadly drafted, and it can be changed. But what I wanted to cover was all possible situations where a conflict of interest could arise. And what we're talking about is not only something where there is an actual conflict, but where there is an appearance that something is wrong, that an appearance that someone is in a position to influence official state action. And so for that reason, and I guess I took my cue from some provisions in Senator Fisher's bill, you have to start including a number of these other people. And again, it's not going to be every situation that the ethics agency is going to say, you can't engage in this activity. In fact, I would think in the vast majority situations,
But every public official in the state and every member of a board or commission at the state or local level has got to ask all of these people, their grandchildren, their ex-spouses, either whole or half-blood, adopt their step, grandparents, they are going to have to keep track of the economic activity of every one of these people to see whether or not they should go to this board and say, I may have a conflict of interest because my grandchild just bid on a job for the state. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's right. That my son, I'm commissioner of natural resources, and my son has just put in a bid for a mining claim, or I'm a director in the Department of Administration, and my wife wants to contract with the state for a large contract for whatever purpose. I guess that doesn't offend me, and it might offend me if those persons got that contract or got that mining claim, and I found out about it, and there would be some at least appearance that something was going on, and again we want to avoid the appearances of a conflict of interest.
Well, I've got a better example. You're on the Juneau Zoning and Planning Board, and your grandson up in Amber just filed a mining claim, and you don't know about it. Are you liable to report that?
I think once you find out about it, if that's the kind of activity that comes within your duties to regulate or to review or to take some kind of action on, then I think you've got a responsibility to say, look, I'm in this position, my relative is in this position, is that a conflict of interest? I would propose the agency that I refrain from reviewing that claim, and that's how I would propose to eliminate the interest. I guess I'm not offended by that either. I mean, if at some point
what does offend you exactly? I mean, how far?
What offends me are conflicts of interest of whatever nature.
We all agree to that. You know, I think what offends you is appearance of conflict of interest, not the conflict of interest itself.
Absolutely.
And somewhere along the line, we're going to have to say, if we want to keep people in government in the state, to keep people in public office and boards and commissions at both the local and the state level, sometime we're going to have to say, well, you know, you cannot avoid all appearances of conflict of interest, and what we're really interested in is your reality. So how are we going to handle it so that those people that make the ultimate decision, the constituents, are aware of any potential appearances and either accept them or reject them in the ballot. That's what we have to worry about.
Okay, let me just say that I don't have any ability, I don't have any confidence in my ability to draft a piece of legislation that is specific enough or readable enough to cover all the various fact situations that might potentially arise. And that's why I would propose a draft that's very broad and let a separate independent body review all those situations after taking a look at the specific facts in each individual case. It's a case-by-case determination. And I frankly just can't draft legislation that is going to do the things that I think you want done.
And that's our problem.
It's very difficult to do it.
And if you draft it too broad, then the cure is worse than the disease.
That's right.
And we still haven't solved the problem. All we've done is put everybody in jeopardy and to no avail.
My turn this time around.
Mr. Chairman, I see that it says it is a potential conflict of interest. I don't think we should lose sight of that. And the gentleman has said that his committee would be making the determination. It's really important that we satisfy the public in order to increase the confidence in their state government. And you're not going to do it by figuring out how to best serve the legislators so that they can serve in the legislature and still continue their business as usual. That may be an ideal situation, but somehow we have some past history that has caused the people to lose confidence in their government. And that's what we're faced with, really, trying to restore some of that confidence. And if we have to kind of bite the bullet here to do that,
Barbara, we're not talking about just the state legislature. Stop kicking that poor dog around. We're talking about every public official out there serving in any public capacity at all, and all of their children, all of their grandparents, all of their grandchildren, all of their ex-spouses. Ex-spouses? Give me a break. That's the last person you want to keep from getting a job.
That's the idea.
We're talking about half the people in the state.
I realize that.
Half the people in the state.
Having been a public official, many local governments have done this very thing. Matsu Borough has a lot of this already in place, and it wasn't easy. We had to fight all kinds of public officials in order to do it, but we have done it. We have good conflict of interest legislation on the borough level.
Where is it? Can we get copies of it?
Well, certainly. If that's what you'd like.
Let's bring that into the
Can you make arrangements for that?
Surely.
Okay. Are you finished? Okay. Well, we're running out of time here, and I think we lost two of the members. And I think what we ought to do is review the material, especially the draft in the AG's office, and then our next meeting, hopefully, we can have a work session or a draft session on conflict of interest legislation.
The big point, Mr. Chairman, if we're not going to accept APOC to do this, then we have to come up with an alternative, period.
I can see a paragraph down here that might be engraved with you.
I'd rather have the two other members here before we make a policy decision. I know we can make it with four, but that would mean all four of us have to agree on it. I don't think that's good.
Well, except you have to make a larger policy decision as to whether or not you're going to improve public officials. And if you do that, if you're not zeroing just on the legislature, and you're going to improve public officials, then you can't have just simply a legislative ethics committee. That's a little broader.
Tim, you missed our last meeting. You made some basic policy decisions.
What was the policy decision?
We're
going to,
our first emphasis is on the legislature. Those poor 60 folks. That's our first emphasis with internal and intramural structure ethics committees, and that's what we're fighting over here now. And we've made that decision, and then this is a more broader approach that involves all public officials, but this is not our first priority. Our first priority is more public.
Okay.
And then we also have decisions about state officials, commissioners, and directors.
My point is, if you're going to restrict these poor folks called legislators, you know, into not being able to compete with any other public official out there just because they happen to be legislators. I'm not going to support that. You know, if you're going to restrict us, then I want to restrict every public official out there, plus the press.
They do in Alabama, Senator. They do restrict the press in Alabama. They have to disclose all.
Thursday. Meeting is adjourned until Thursday.
Okay, so we're essentially.
I know it is. Only that it looks like they will. And they have.
I have. About something that you said.